because I'm Natalie Minnis and I write a blog occasionally called The Purposeful Path, which is on Substack. I do other things as well, which take up a lot of my time. So I rarely get time to update that post, the posts on The Purposeful Path. I'm also a mountain leader and I love hill walking and I work as a therapist, cognitive behavioural hypnotherapy and ACT and IFS. So, yeah, complicated life.
So what are the last two, ACT and IFS?
That's right. ACT stands for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, which is really a lot of exercises and metaphors, fantastic with anxiety and all kinds of things, changing perspectives. And IFS stands for Internal Family Systems, which is actually not really to do with families, people's families, but it's more about the families inside of us, about the idea that we have multiplicities of personality almost. It's quite difficult to explain, but it's utterly fascinating. We have various parts of us that can drive us sometimes in certain ways emotionally. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me almost like schizophrenia you're talking about, and the sort of thing that, you know, maybe in the past, someone, if they had the sorts of conflicts going on in their minds or whatever, or difficulties, they would in the past have gone to see a priest or a vicar.
Possibly. I mean, there are lots of different ways of interpreting the mind because no one can really quantify the mind. So IFS postulates that we all have these different parts of ourselves and they quite often get stuck in the past, quite often at young ages. But there is a self. Everyone has this self, you can call it, which is unchanging and really just, I can't describe it. It's very difficult to describe because it can sound as if I'm talking about a kind of everlasting soul, but the self is the unchanging aspect of ourselves. And the idea with IFS therapy is to try and act from self as much as possible and not be driven by parts. The parts are always there. You're not trying to get rid of them, but it's really about being self-led. And that's quite interesting because my philosophy generally of life is that I think we look for leaders too much. Personally speaking, I think that. And I think self-leadership is something that we should all be aiming for, really, instead of constantly looking for someone else to lead us. That's just my personal view.
No, well, you're right. I mean, people do tend to be a bit like sheep. But the thing is, your Substack, I have a vision of you up the top of a mountain, having spent hours getting up there with an amazing view, contemplating humanity, the world, and then scribbling it all down on your Substack.
Yes, that would be wonderful if I had the time to do just that, because I love writing and I just need to organise my time better, I think. So I actually write for, sometimes I write for this a blog called Walk Highlands, which is very popular among hill walkers in Scotland. And I've been doing that more because of not being able to get access to my Facebook account recently. So,
yeah, well, we're going to talk about that in a sec, but I'd just like to, you know, prod you on this idea of hill walking and how it can actually be quite inspirational. and of course, any good writer sees that as a challenge to actually get their ideas down on paper, to arrange their ideas in a way, to actually see them on the printed page. Because you could, it's, anyone can have ideas. It's just some people are better than others at actually getting them down on the on paper.
Yes. And, you know, I used to work as a journalist on magazines and I trained myself to be able to overcome writer's block and just get things down on the page. So I'm good at that when it's a subject like hill walking, but my mind gets full of ideas and quite often I never get round to expressing those ideas. So I need to really organise my time and get more of those ideas on the page, I think.
What about this little hiccup you've had with Facebook? I mean, I personally myself have had problems with it. I've noticed recently massive amount of advertising and what I would call spam of stuff I've got absolutely no interest in whatsoever. Very few posts from people that in the past were I put as favorites and that sort of thing. So in a way, it seems to me as if my feed has been getting spammed by Facebook itself.
Really? I don't remember, because I haven't been able to get access to my account now since about April. And I used Facebook to keep in touch with family and friends. So it's been quite a strange time. And I just get the impression that Facebook is, I don't know what they're up to, but they seem to have been hemorrhaging followers anyway for quite a long time, especially among young people. And I'm just wondering if this is why. A lot, you know, there's a lot of these fake accounts and Facebook groups that get attacked by spam. But I didn't realise people's actual accounts were attacked, unless maybe you've been hacked.
Well, I think it's just advertising, you know, increasing push for advertising. But, you know, our relationship, I think, with social media, you can tell me if you agree or disagree, is a little bit like a relationship with a person. You know, you're, as a youngster, you're quite happy to flip between friends and one and another, and as you get older, you become more attached to one. But I think particularly youngsters will go to wherever. At the moment, it seems to be TikTok, where the algorithms are less restrictive.
Right, yeah, maybe that's the case. I think that is the case, which is surprising, because TikTok is from the Republic of China, isn't it? I don't know. It always seems that social media always seems to have this pattern where it kind of lures people in and tries to get more and more attention from them constantly. And it sort of captures them eventually. It's very difficult to break away from, which is why I think this thing with Facebook has been quite a shock to me, because I have been lured in since 2009. I've had that account, and suddenly it's been taken away. I mean, do you want me to discuss how it happened?
Yeah, yeah, sure. But I would also say, I think this has always been pretty much forever the case with the media, maybe for the last 70, 80 years. You know, with the revolution in the 1960s and 70s with television and radio, I mean, it was, I mean, the 50s with radio, a lot of people became really attached to their TVs, and because the actual stuff that they were putting on, the drama, etc., the news, things like the Cook Report, you know, Roger Cook, people would want to watch, see if he was going to get beaten up each week. And then at the end of the week, he'd hand over the film to the police and someone would get arrested and jailed because of what they've been up to, this sort of thing. That was real TV. And there's lots of people around, particularly older people now, who have just become attached to their televisions because of that era. A bit like maybe you and I with Facebook. So explain what's happened with your Facebook account.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I stopped watching TV in 2012 simply because I was running a business at the time and I was too busy. And I was amazed, because I had thought I would keep up with it on the iPlayer. And as soon as I stopped watching it, I lost interest in it, as if I'd been bewitched and suddenly the spell had been broken. So I've never gone back to it. But what happened? I've had this account on Facebook since 2009, and I have this phone which is de-Googled. So that's another issue. I have been trying to do a kind of digital detox for quite some time. So I have this phone which is called a TerraCube. It's called a Mirena TerraCube. And Mirena is a company that de-Googles it, and they're based in France. They take various phones and they will offer to de-Google them, and, you know, you pay for the phone. So they do it with the Fairphone. And I chose this TerraCube because I particularly liked it. It's got a replaceable battery and things like that. So I bought that last year, and 7 months after I bought it, the screen went black, started going blank, and it was a display problem. And they just said, well, send it back, it's still under guarantee. But it had to be sent back to France. And as soon as the battery must have died, I lost access to Facebook and Facebook and WhatsApp. And I thought that would come back when I got the phone back. And the phone was delayed in the post. It was held up at the depot, first of all, and then it was sent back to the wrong address. It was a complete catalogue of errors. But when I finally got it back 6 weeks later, I got access to WhatsApp again, but I could not get onto Facebook. And it's just like Alice in Wonderland, because there's no particular reason. I haven't been put on the Facebook naughty step, at least I don't think so. It just keeps saying that I've got to verify it using a different device. And it wants me to verify it either with the TerraCube, but when I put it onto the TerraCube, it then says that I need to verify it with a different device or a browser. But each time I try to do that, it says, no, you need to verify it with a different device. And I even got this bizarre message saying that I was going to be blocked temporarily for going too fast.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you sent us that. I think I might share that with listeners. Yeah, for going too fast. So it was obviously thinking that you were tapping away so quickly that you must have been an AI bot.
I think that's what it was thinking. And I'm a good typist, but I'm not that good, I don't think.
No, I was thinking you're almost the opposite, really. You're a fairly laid back, I wouldn't say slow, that would be rude, but, you know, you take things at your leisure. You're not rushed.
Yeah, maybe. But it's the whole thing has been crazy. And it did make me think, I had almost 400 friends on Facebook, and most of them were real friends. I will see them on, you know, through hill walking or climbing. But do I really want to be attached at the hip to Facebook? I mean, I have to say, they offer you other ways to get online back on, or to get your account back. And that's either by, you know, by giving ID, either scanning your passport or your driver's license or an ID card. And I tried
that. Well, that's pretty cheeky. That's very cheeky.
Yes. And I was on holiday last year and the same thing happened, but it was temporary. So I scanned my driver's license and I don't know what I was thinking, but I did it. I tried to scan it and it just would not accept it. And I do think this is kind of nudging us towards digital ID. I really regret the fact that I even tried to scan my driver's license, but there's no way that I'm going to use a passport or something to get onto social media. It's not a bank.
Actually, Amazon did exactly the same with me, because I was selling my book and these Bible studies on Amazon, and then it kept saying, "Oh, you know, you're a fake person. You've got to put your passport on." And I just, instead of doing anything, I just cancelled the account, deleted the account. You know, I'm not playing these silly games that they like to play with you. No. And another thing I'd say with particularly with Facebook, and I guess kind of almost all social media, we had in the Journalist Union quite a good discussion about all this, and my conclusion was, I don't have any personal friends on there. That to me, these are, you know, or maybe you could have two separate accounts, one with your personal friends and your family and things like that, and another one for activists and for sharing, you know, not very well publicized news and, you know, amazing things like this, this amazing conference that's been going on in St. Petersburg. The sort of opposite of the World Economic Forum, and very little coverage, if any, at all on our mass media here. But it's been fascinating stuff. So what do you make of this, you know, the idea of sort of mixing your activism and your blogging and your sort of, you know, political work, really, which is about a lot of your stuff is about, you know, policy, even international stuff, with friends, because this is a bit of a, you know, you could do it, but it might be a bit dicey.
I don't think Facebook works for that, for me anyway. Maybe it does for others. But, you know, I, as I say, I've had the account since 2009, and I was a very different person back in 2009. I was what would be called woke at that time. And I did used to share political ideas on Facebook quite a lot. I didn't lose any friends for it, but I didn't convert anyone, so to speak. And I'm glad I didn't, because, you know, I changed over the years and I don't really want, I think looking back, it was a mistake to sort of be politicized on Facebook for me, for the type of politics I had then. And it's not that I think I'm going to change again, but I just feel that Facebook isn't the platform for that. So I used to do that quite a bit on Twitter. And Twitter became, in my opinion, it became so toxic. I just didn't want any more to do with it, even before Elon Musk got involved. I do use Substack, and that's what my blog, The Purposeful Path, is about. It's my outlet for those kind of things, as I used to have the Imagining Freedom podcast. And I might actually start podcasting on Substack. And at the moment, I think Substack's a really good platform. It allows you to control what you write and also to control information about the people who follow you, so that if it removed your platform, you would still have information, all the information, you still have your work and the people that follow you on it, you'd be able to contact them. And I think that's quite important.
It is. I mean, particularly say for, this is mainly for journalists, I suppose, Substack. But I mean, there are these three different ways that social media is used. One is for businesses and, you know, sort of promoting your stuff. Another is personal friends. And the other, as I say, is, you know, sort of doing something to alleviate the problems there are with the mainstream press. But anyway, look, just carry on the story about what was on with Facebook, because at the moment you've left us where you can't get any access to your account again.
I can't. And I've been using Facebook to keep in touch with friends and family, because my father was from the Bahamas. So I've got a lot of relatives in the Bahamas, and it was great for just wee chatty sort of things. They're interested in my hill walking posts. So it's really sort of light stuff. And really, I think if the platform is going to suddenly take away all my my account just at the drop of a hat, then I really think I should rethink the whole thing and not be so tied to Facebook. So I have set up a new account under a slightly different name. And I know you helped me with that, which is great. But so far, I've got 4 friends now on that account. Maybe more friends will join in.
Only and 4 friends? Oh,
yes.
Well, look, it's worth saying something about that too, isn't it? Because, I mean, the thing is that I have got the right to post on your Facebook page, but you haven't. Yeah.
I know. I can't do a thing. I can't like the couple.
It's like Monty Python or something. You know, it's totally absurd.
Yes. You know, and many activists have been saying this for years, just don't have anything to do with Facebook. And I've always known that they were right. But I thought, well, I'm only using it for kind of lighthearted things. But now it doesn't matter. You can still get the whole thing removed. And that's the same with any of these platforms. I feel passionately that it's important to have control of the things that you create online so that they can't, you know, so that you own them and they can't be taken away at the drop of a hat.
Now, when we were chatting, we're not at least getting your Facebook thing going. You mentioned something about your vaguely anarchist tendencies.
Yes.
And that to me is interesting, because when people use this word anarchism, they sometimes mean chaos, don't they? So what do you mean by it?
I suppose it's more along the lines of agorism or voluntarism. And it goes back to probably 2012. I'm sure you remember the Occupy movement, which I wasn't particularly directly involved in, but I was in a group called Occupy Everywhere, which was on LinkedIn. And I was a completely different person. It was, I was sort of awake in some ways, but I was really interested in politics, and through that group, I met an anarchist who really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And he was an agorist, and agorism is really about just stepping aside from the system that many people call it the beast system. And just instead of actually trying to fight against it, just not using it and using different markets and things like that. And agorism was developed by a man called Samuel L. Konkin III. And he's no longer with us. But his manifesto that he wrote about agorism is very easy to read. And I don't like isms generally, so I don't like to say I'm an agorist. But I would say that's possibly the closest political affiliation I might have. There's also voluntarism and minarchism, which is just about small governments. I just think the governments, I mean, they've let us down so many times. But I think full agorism would work in an ideal world. And I know that many anarchists would find that really offensive. But I do think that humanity maybe isn't ready for full anarchism. But working towards that by really looking at the leadership in ourselves, I think, is really important. It's almost as if we're being called to do that, many of us.
I mean, you can turn your back on things, but then you suddenly find, the system can come and bite you, other thing is, of course, we've got this general election campaign going on. It'd be lovely to hear your views on that, on why you think Sunak has called it now. And it's a very strange one. It looks like lots of minor parties.
I know. Which is an interesting thing, but I just don't trust any of them. I have voted for independence before. Generally, I vote none. And I don't know, I've lost so much faith in the political system. I was watching a really interesting YouTube, I don't know if I should mention, but Unheard. And they were interviewing several European commentators about Europe turning to the right. Apparently, a lot of European countries have voted in right-wing parties, France and Germany and Italy. And Thomas Fazi was talking about Italy, and he said that Giorgia Meloni, who's the prime minister of it, or president of Italy, she's meant to be very right-wing and populist. I hate the word populism, but she apparently has been supporting Ursula von der Leyen in her campaign for re-election. And that doesn't seem very populist to me at all. So even someone like Giorgia Meloni, apparently, I have very mixed feelings on migration, but apparently migration, which is one of Giorgia Meloni's biggest policies, has spiked during her term. So,
it sounds like Britain, doesn't it? So immigration it starts skyrocketing after Brexit and after the, but also there is this thing where they say the right, don't they, but actually there's a serious proportion of the left that are against Brussels. It's just that they don't get any political representation. I'm talking about people like George Galloway. There's no there's apparently no real representation, so it seems that whole political discourse is completely in shreds. And in a way, this seems to be kind of a recipe for chaos. So even if you vote for one of the minor parties, all that might happen in your constituency is your constituency flips from team A to team B, or vice versa, which basically have the same policy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was a big supporter of the SNP around the early 2000s. And I was so pleased when they had their landslide victory. And then they just completely started acting like the establishment, especially during 2020. I mean, there's so many things that are glaring that have been happening over the past few years. And I feel that a lot of people are just being put down. That's why I hate the word populism. It's like the little people are having their say, so they call it populist. And what's the opposite of populist? It's elitist. And it's almost as if the little people are daring to actually vote the wrong way. So the elites are getting really angry. And at the moment, the elites seem to be represented more in left wing. I don't understand why, but it really, really disgusts me in a way that the politicians just sort of talk down to people.
I think it's deliberate. The idea is to get people to disengage with politics, and that seems to be working quite well, with less and less people voting during elections, and less of people's views actually being expressed in any way by politicians. We're almost certainly going to get a Starmer government. It seems as if the script has been written for this. What do you think they're going to be like?
Well, I like Patricia Opulenta's description of the Smarmer government. It just almost doesn't bear thinking of. He's the one who said that he preferred Davos to Westminster. I think that says it all. And I think, first of all, they'll probably ramp up this kind of Armageddon card that they're playing. The war, the sort of push to war. It's just, it's terrifying. And I think people really do have to say enough is enough. We want nothing to do with this. I know some people will support them, but.
Even one of the canvassers I was chatting to on the doorstep last week was sceptical about him, saying, oh gosh, well, yeah, sorry. Yeah. But the thing is, it's almost like he's the perfect guy. I mean, he's well known as someone who just ditches his policies. And I'm not saying that any of the rest of them are any better, other than George Galloway, who's absolutely stuck to his guns ever since the 1970s.
Yes, he has. But I'm not sure I trust George Galloway either. Although he's a great orator. I love hearing him speak. I used to campaign in 2001 against the move to the push to the Afghan war, and George Galloway and Tommy Sheridan used to come along. I mean, there weren't many of us protesting against that at that time, and they were both brilliant speakers, brilliant entertainment. But George Galloway sometimes used to kind of start talking passionately against the war, and then he would slightly shift into something else so that the whole crowd would be cheering, and suddenly you'd be cheering for something else. And I thought that was very slick. I don't know.
I think he's one of the few genuine politicians out there. The rest of them really are like, literally, you can plug a cassette into the back of their head and they will say whatever they're told to say. Whereas George does kind of speak from the heart. Anyway, that's just my view. But look, many of us think we want to get away from it, like you do your mountaineering and getting it up into the hills. So, you know, get away from all this nonsense that these city slickers are foisting on the rest of us. And I know you've also been having a bit of an experiment in trying to get to the hills and back a day on public transport. So how's that been going?
Yeah. And it's funny because I've got friends who are just as passionate about me in the cause of freedom, you know, and be able to freedom of speech and things like that, but who are also environmentalists. And that's almost become a dirty word recently because of the extremism that's gone on about, you know, with these groups. What's it called? X something or other. But I am an environmentalist and I do care about saving the earth. I just don't think we should be forced to do it through rules and regulations. So I've been trying to use my car less often, and I enjoy driving, but I don't like driving long distances. So I've been trying to use public transport more, and it's quite difficult to do that if you're a hill walker, because there's many areas where you just cannot get to with public transport. So I thought it would be a good idea to put my bicycle on the train, and I travelled up to Spain Bridge, which is just north of Fort William. And from there, I cycled to the hill walk and had a wonderful day, beautiful weather. This was about 3 weeks ago. And unfortunately, it took a bit longer coming back than I'd expected. So I missed the train literally by 5 minutes. I was belting back on my bike, just missed it. And I thought, well, the next train's in 3 hours, and both of the trains that I booked had lots of spaces on it for bikes. So I thought there wouldn't be any problem. But when that train finally arrived, unfortunately, there was no space for my bike. And the guard just says, you can't get on. And I said, it's the last train of the evening. I'm a woman on my own. What am I going to do? And he said, well, that's not, you know, basically he didn't say that's not my problem, but He just said, no, there's no way you can get on. So I said, could I just tie my bike up, lock my bike to on the platform, and then I can come back with the car and collect it later? And he said, look, I can't wait. So the only thing he could advise me was to try and, he said, there's another train that will be going in the other direction. You can go to Fort William and there'll be more chance of getting accommodation in Fort William. And
hang on, this guy's a little Hitler.
Well, that's how it came across to me. People have different opinions, but yeah, I couldn't believe it, you know. And anyone who knows that area knows that it's almost impossible to get accommodation in Fort William at any time in summer at the last minute. And if you do get accommodation, you're going to pay an absolute fortune. And the same in Spain Bridge, there was no accommodation anywhere. So I just didn't know what
to do. Do you have a tent with you, a bivy bag, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so basically I found out that the next train to Fort William wasn't until 10 o'clock. So I had no choice but to camp at the station, basically. Well, I didn't camp, I just had to lie on a bench. And I had this survival bag with me. It cost about a fiver, and it's just like a big, massive orange plastic bag, which was just as well because there were so many midges about. It was like torture. And it was cold at night, but it had been a beautiful day. So I had three layers, all quite thin layers. And even with the survival bag, I was quite cold.
Well,
and
what about a sleeping bag? Did you have a sleeping bag?
Nothing like that.
Oh my God.
It was just on the bench, you know, and it was really uncomfortable. And it was a bit creepy, but, you know, I thought Spain Bridge is safe enough. I wouldn't like to be sort of walking the streets of Fort William necessarily in the middle of the night. So, okay, I survived, you know, but it did make me think maybe I won't just put my bike on the train for long distances. I'll have to think about it next time, or unless I've got my tent with me. So I just thought, you know, the government apparently is trying to encourage people to use their cars less or even to get them out of their cars. And so they do have, some trains have a lot of space on them. There's been an improvement in public transport. But this was the Caledonian Sleeper, so it only had six spaces. They just don't think of how, you know, people could get into serious difficulties if it was in winter, for example.
So hang on. Are you saying that the train that you were told you couldn't get on was the Caledonian Sleeper?
It was, yes.
Yeah. And actually, was there room for the bike on there? Or was this guy just being annoying?
No, I think there probably wasn't. Maybe if I'd held it in the corridor or something, it might have presented a safety risk. And that's why I said, could you just hold the train for 2 minutes so I could lock it up? And he sort of looked at his watch and said, 1 minute. And there was no way I would have been able to do that because the bike racks were on the other platform and I couldn't see any. I was, you know, my brain was running so fast. I was trying to work out what am I going to do? And I could see that if I went away, he was just going to go anyway. So.
Well, it's a horrible story. Such a shame. And it might just be that he's the one guy on the whole of the Scottish Railways that would behave like that. I mean, it sounds bizarre because these trains are very, very good at making up a little bit of time in between stations. And you're talking sometimes about 30, 40 miles between stations. Mm-hmm. Very unlucky.
And the staff on the train that I'd got in the morning had been absolutely lovely, all of them. Yeah. So maybe he was in a bad mood. I don't know.
Yeah, the Caledonian Sleeper. Maybe there's some sort of secret society that runs it. I don't know. You never know. It's very difficult to get a cheap ticket on there, I've heard. But anyway, look, but if you know the right people, no problem. Anyway, so Natalie, how do people follow your stuff? And maybe you could just wind up with some advice about Facebook, because you've been really kind of stung here and you've lost all that. Well, I mean, you've probably lost access to, for example, all your data that you've got. So they may give you access to that after a while. So they're supposed to give you access to, so you can download all your data, lists of all your grants.
I did that once a few years ago, just to see if it worked, really. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I just think maybe it's a sort of kick up the butt to get me to stop relying on these platforms.
It's your data. It's your data. Yeah. So they have it, but they have to give it to you because it's yours. And it's the same with all of these social media networks. They have to let you have your data back if you ask for it. And so Facebook aren't doing that. So that may be a way for you to badger them through their help system to force them to give your account back. You never know. Yeah, anyway, so just tell us whereabouts you are on Substack and if you're going to be doing the podcast, where that might be.
Yeah, The Purposeful Path. That's the Substack name. And the reason it's called that is because I really think that we have to have this. Well, we don't have to, but developing a sense of purpose and self-leadership can, it's just something that I think would help people instead of just following other leaders all the time. So that's what I'm trying to drive towards with the posts that I make. So I just need to do some more of them and maybe some podcasts.
Yeah, having an independent mind and a bit of moral fibre to back it up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'm not saying necessarily we have to do the right thing. There isn't a right or a wrong. And I certainly don't. For example, I don't use Amazon. That's my personal view ever since during the pandemic in 2020. I noticed that businesses were being forced to shut down and yet Amazon was just coining it in. And I haven't really used it unless there's something that I cannot get anywhere else since then. But that's my choice. It's not because I'm a virtuous person. I'm not trying to say, you know, I'm a pure virtuous person who doesn't use this or doesn't use that. It's because I want to contribute a little bit towards the world I want to see, I suppose. Be the change you want to see, that old cliche.
Yeah, but I think that Roger Waters famously a few months ago said his mum said to him, read and read and read around the subject and then do the right thing. So I think maybe, Natalie, you're being a bit modest. Maybe you are doing the right thing.
Maybe. I don't know. That's not why I do it, though. I just do it.
All right. Anyway, Natalie Minnis, thanks ever so much for joining us. And hopefully Scott Rail won't put you off doing that sort of thing again. And maybe we can have a further investigation into the secret societies that run the Caledonian Sleeper.
Maybe.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Tony.